Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Anime Lounge Podcast. I'm your host, Lance, here with my other host, Matt. Before we get started, we like to introduce our adult beverages of choice. And today I will be drinking some Willett Kentucky Bourbon Whiskey, and I'll be chasing that back with a New Glarus Spotted Cow. What about you, Matt?
I am going to be drinking an E.H. Taylor Small Batch and also throwing that back with a Spotted Cow as always. Please stay tuned for after our anime talk, because we have a few bottles that I had gotten from my parents when they did part of the Kentucky Bourbon Trail, and we are actually going to be trying them because there's four different bottles. So please stay tuned for after the episode if you want to know our opinions on a couple different bottles.
Right. And with that being said, Matt, you want to let everyone know what we're going to be talking about today?
Yes, we are going to be covering season one of The Wrong Way to Use Healing Magic, or if you know it by the light novel, which I am not going to butcher the Japanese name. I'm just going to go by the translation, which it is translated to How to Use Healing Magic Wrongly, main recovery team member running through the battlefield.
So insanely specific.
Very, very specific. Very very light novel-esque as well.
Yeah, and we can talk about this as we get into the actual content of our discussion, but you're not getting that in the first half of the series.
No, you're not.
So it's ironically funny.
Absolutely. And then as for a synopsis, I'm going to be stealing this from Crunchyroll because I really liked it and let them do the work. An ordinary walk home from school turns into an epic journey for Usuto. After suddenly being dropped into another world with two fellow students, Usuto learns he was summoned there by accident. But things turn around when he discovers a unique aptitude for healing magic.
Yeah, that's without getting into details, like that's exactly how this starts. And
yeah, absolutely.
I guess at the same time, like this is your typical introduction to an isekai.
Except for it was an accident. Yeah. Talk about wrong place, right time kind of thing.
Pretty much. Which is going to be a conversation that I want to bring up.
Yes.
With his specific situation, because that's going to definitely be something to talk about.
Absolutely. But Lance, I know you've got a pretty good word of the day. You want to let us know what that is?
Today's Lance's lesson is going to be the Japanese word for medic, and that is going to be Isha. Isha is spelled I-S-H-A. I wanted to use Isha today because Isha can also be translated as doctor, and we're going to stick to the medic side because we're dealing with a healer type that is medically taking care of soldiers on the battlefield, but it still translates the same. So it's very fitting because the whole point of the healing defensive crew is to take care of those who have been hurt. So Isha is a very common word, usually used for doctor, but we're using it today.
Yeah, no, your whole thought behind wanting to do these words is you didn't want to go super convoluted, super crazy, something that you would never use. You wanted to make it something that you could potentially, if you wanted to, actually use, know how to say. So we could have thought of something super crazy, but that doesn't benefit anybody.
Yeah, so Isha is an everyday use. I went to go see the Isha today. Simple enough. We're good.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Lance.
And now that we have that taken care of, before we jump into any kind of anime talk, let's try to see if there's any anime differences with the manga.
Nani? Bankai!
Again, the manga is not the original source, it's the light novel, but I read the manga this time around because that was just kind of timing and made my life a lot easier than trying to listen to the light novel. I also didn't know it was a light novel until like earlier this week, so it wasn't going to happen.
Oh, then that's totally fine. Our thing is manga, so
yep,
it's not something that we always need to go above and beyond on.
Yes, absolutely. For anybody who wants to start the manga, but after season one concludes, unfortunately, your best bet is to actually start on chapter 20 And that is because the events that happen in the very, very end of the season don't happen until way later in the manga. So without trying to like being like, oh yeah, these are all the changes. No, just read a couple chapters back and you'll get them before they embark on their journey to the other countries in chapter 20.
Are you trying to say like a lot of more information?
Yes,
there happens before they actually leave.
Yeah, there was a bunch of stuff that happens before they embark on their journey, which I'm not going to go into because I feel like they might talk about it in the beginning of season one.
That's fair.
Or sorry, in the beginning of season two.
Oh yeah, that's what you remember. But yeah, okay, that makes sense. Oh, that's funny. I'll let you decide if you want to share that or not, because
I do talk about a little bit of it, just because it's may or may not be important. Like, there's a character that he is important, and so we're going to have to know about him. So that's why I don't really want to talk about it, because it's like, I feel like they're going to introduce this character in the beginning of season two.
Okay.
So Kazuki, he actually is the first one to get his magic read, so they do it in a different order.
Oh, really? Yeah, because it was definitely Suzune, the girl hero.
Yep. Nope, it is Kazuki that does it first. You follow along with Kazuki and Suzune around, and they're talking about with the princess. Suzune reads Usuto's diary because they went and saw him at the barracks and he was out training. So you see her like reading his diary.
Oh.
So instead of him like talking about his diary, it's her reading the diary to us.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that could have been a very fun thing for the anime to just play with.
Yes, and it goes in line with her personality.
Right.
I kind of see why they did that, because then they can kind of just throw the character, the two heroes in later, but it would have been nice to see.
Sure.
And the first time that Usuto runs into that snake in the woods, in that forest, he was actually sleeping.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't just roaming around looking with his bloodlust and stuff?
Yeah, no, it was sleeping. It was massive and just chilling. Okay. So he immediately backed up and essentially ran away. But yeah, one thing I will say is that they elongated a lot. Obviously, 19-ish chapters is not very much within 13 episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Granted, these are all 45 pages, so they're a little bit longer, but even still, there was a lot of information that was elongated. And then you knew about Rose losing her eye during the demon's first meeting as they were talking about her. So they're the ones that brought up the fact that she had lost her eye.
One of the demons?
So remember, it was like episode 5 or 6, something like that, where the first time you see the demons like congregating and they're like planning to invade.
Yeah.
They're talking about Rose and they're talking about how she had basically the fight that they had and she had lost her eye. You knew about her eye way before, because the first time I watched this, I thought it was just like
an
anime hairstyle character design.
Exactly.
And then, you know, you find out later on that it's like, oh no, she's actually just covering her eye because there's nothing there.
Okay. So what you're saying is, in the manga, we find out that her hair is covering her eye because it's a bad eye. But yes, we find out that it's actually a bad eye. Do we find out that she got cursed because of that eye, or because it got injured? Do we find out that whole demon battle that early, or does that get explained later?
That never happens.
Like, what? At all.
Like that whole
cursed demon blade?
Yeah, that whole two episodes?
Well, her backstory. Yeah, her backstory is about 2 episodes long.
Yeah, that whole backstory does not happen.
Insane.
Yeah.
Oh, it is definitely got to be in the light novel then.
Yeah, absolutely. I would 100% agree. It is in the light novel. No idea. But yeah, no, it's not in the manga at all.
Damn, that's big information.
Kind of.
I mean, to appreciate Rose, and I'm really glad the anime did it.
Yes.
To bring depth into this character. I'm definitely glad that they did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. No, it was needed for her because it kind of explained some things. But yeah, that was never in the manga. Do you find out that she's 25?
Okay. Like, I know she's not old.
Yeah.
So like 25. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I thought like late 20s. So a couple years earlier than what I thought. The coats are water and dirt proof.
Oh, they're okay.
Yep.
They're something proof. I would just imagine they were just regular.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought. I was like, oh, okay. That's interesting. And then the first time that Usato comes back after the fight with the demons is when he runs into, was it Amako? The fox girl.
Yep. That's the first time he runs into her?
Yep.
So he doesn't randomly run into her and get the vision?
So he gets that, but I'm saying after that whole fight, he runs into her again on his first journey back to the kingdom. And then they have that conversation then. Like, they have that whole long conversation about wanting to save her mom and all of that information. That happens
way earlier.
Right there.
Okay, so that happens way earlier than how how the season one anime.
Yeah, because I think that was in like episode 12 or something like that.
No, it was 13, I think. Well, it was basically 12 or 13, whatever. It was at the end. Like, this is the start of what season two is going to be.
Yep, exactly. So that happens, and like it happens in the kingdom. They're doing it. They basically have this entire conversation in an alley.
Wow.
And then what's actually kind of funny is that they end the conversation, and then she's like, oh yeah, you're going to get mobbed by all those people. Uh-huh. So she tells them that this, all those people, they're going to run into all those people, but she tells them like right as those people are coming to get them. And he's like, you couldn't have told us this before it happened.
Adds to the comedy, sure.
Yes. That was funny. And then the last thing that I have is just you see Usato having a sparring match, and then something that is important that it's not spoiling anything, but I feel like it's going to be important for season two is that they talk about magic strengthening. So basically going beyond your limits and exceeding your magic limits, where they believe that most people have basically a cap. If you're 10, if you can, to put it in like lifting numbers, if you can lift 100 pounds, that's your limit. Like, and they're talking about basically what do you have to do to use magic to be able to push past that 100 pounds limit that you are pretty much born with.
Okay.
And it's not a common thing for people to push past.
So they're trying to explain how this is kind of like jobless reincarnation. Like, they're saying that like you're born with a limit.
Yep.
And they just accept that there is that limit. But now they're trying to push. They understand that they can try to push past your born limit. Okay.
Yeah. So it's people can try, but not everybody succeeds.
Right.
So it's one of those things where, yeah, cool, I want to be stronger, but it might not matter.
Right.
And in like Rose and Usato's, as an example, they were able to push past what is believed to be normal person's limits.
Okay. That's fair. I like the idea that you said believed to be. So that allows for progression to happen.
Yep. And that's really, without getting into spoilers about some people that I've been introduced to, some scenarios that have happened, because all of this has happened, a lot of things happened after Usato came back to the kingdom to talk about going towards the other kingdoms to be, drawing a blank on the term they use, but basically trying to bring peace and camaraderie, but between all the kingdoms. So yeah, there's they don't just, all right, thanks king, I'm leaving. Like, it doesn't work like that in the manga.
Okay, so very few differences. Yeah. But they introduced some concepts pretty damn early compared to what the anime showing.
Yeah, there was a lot of lengthening. The biggest difference is going to be the fact that there's no Rose backstory.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to just show that later in the manga. I would, like we talked about, I'd be very surprised if the light novel didn't describe anything, period.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if you didn't know all this already in the light novel. But yeah, the manga was good. I enjoyed it.
Great. So with all this information, let's give you guys a quick break and we'll see you in a minute.
Hey Toasties, I'm Missy, here with my bestie Johnsy.
Hey y'all.
Do you like mind-blowing crime cases, spooky tales, and debating theories?
Well, what a clinky-dink, so do we. Grab your beverage and be a part of our Toasted Shenanigans on your favorite podcast app.
You can even send us a story or drink suggestion. Hit us up on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, or at ToastedShenanigans.com.
Hey, this is Tyler, one of the hosts of RangerCast. On our show, we talk about Power Rangers and other multi-unit spandex heroes. We've got news, reviews, interviews. We talk about the comics, the games, the toys, and all things more phenomenal. Find us at Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or check us out at RangerCast.net. May the power protect you.
All right, Lance. So the show itself was interesting. It was a unique take on your typical isekai. So what'd you think of it?
At first, I was kind of shocked about this.
Okay.
Of course, the title in itself was like, this sounds super lame.
Yes.
And it did take me a while to even give this one a try.
Yep.
But I gave it a try because I was seeing hype around it. And yeah, it was okay at first. There's a handful of comedic moments, which really pulled me in.
Yep.
So I really appreciated that. And then as I just continued watching, I did get more and more invested. So in the end, I really did come around to appreciating the show. I would put this above, this is a high mid kind of a show.
I can completely get behind that one.
Like, this isn't going to be one of my favorites. But I was very, very pleasantly surprised about how good this show did end up being. So that's why I'm saying this is a high mid.
Absolutely. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I kind of put this in the, if you were to tell me to give you a list of anime to watch, this would be in the list. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be first, it's not going to be second, but it's in there. It's good if it's something you're trying to be like, hey, what was good last season? This was pretty good last season. Like, it's one of those type where it's like, hey, if you're looking for things to watch, give this one a try.
Definitely. 100% agree. This was a lot of fun to watch. I definitely enjoyed every single episode I saw.
Mm-hmm.
The progression of Usato growing and just going from a nobody to being somebody who's worthy of his powers and the defense crew that he's part of.
Yep.
And just watching him evolve with those human / non-human people that are part of his crew. Like, it was really fun to watch that. There was moments that were like, we were watching those guys, and like, they don't look human. Like,
yes, no.
One of those guys very specifically looked like a goblin.
Yes.
But that's just kind of part of the comedic value of it. So, like, I definitely appreciated that. And they weren't evil. They weren't super nice. They were just like these literal grunts. And he fit in so perfectly, and they made you feel like he was part of it. And there was moments that were like, you knew who Usato was, and then there was that time, like, that dude that stole his lunch, and then he felt like he needed to be, like, some, like, toxic man, like, oh, you feel like you can just give me pity on giving me a lunch after you stole my lunch, and then he had a fight with him in front of the other heroes.
Yep.
To a slight degree, it felt a little forced, but at the same time, like, they did a good job on bringing callbacks, like, that this is the way that those guys work, and it's fun to watch them be who they are. So it was just fun to follow that story.
Yeah, it was a super easy watch.
Oh, for sure.
Everything flowed together well. There was no weird, like, pacing issues. It was very good. There's nothing about this series that's like, oh my God, this is the best show ever, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. Rose is a great, like, mentor, leader type character. Honestly, she was one of my favorite moments, just to kind of go into it, is where they're having, where Usato and the ogre guy are, like, fighting around the kitchen table, and he starts saying, at least I'm more human than our devil commander. And then she throws the spoon at his face.
Yeah, that was really funny.
And then he's like, oh, just kidding. Like,
and they got super colorful, and it was just super funny.
Yeah, he 180'd that as hard and as fast as he could. Mm-hmm. It was very funny. And she just nonchalantly throwing that spoon and cutting his face. It was great. I laughed so hard during that scene. There was enough serious moments in the series to kind of help, like, need the comedic relief in it instead of just trying to be a like just a laugh track type anime. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, all the comedic values hit when they needed to hit. Nothing felt too forced. There might have been a couple of moments here and there where it felt a little forced, but for the most part, like, I accepted everything face value. It was right on the money.
Yeah.
Going along with Rose, I know we usually talk about who our favorite character is, and I would say Rose is definitely my favorite character.
Yes.
Like, it's sad to say that the manga didn't go into depth about her, especially when it comes to her backstory. But Rose is the one that I feel like we learn the most about.
Yep.
Like, even though she's not one of the three heroes, and I'm saying that loosely because technically Usito is not a hero, but like he kind of is. But Rose, we got so much out of her. Her backstory, her training aspects for how she strengthens up her team, just how insane she is. Like, she's too aggressive. Honestly, she's too aggressive. But at the same time, you know, she's fighting a war that is life and death. So
yep.
If she can push these people to be the best that they can be in order to win, of course you need to be aggressive.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes complete sense. I definitely agree with you. There's not a whole lot of characters in this series that you could be like, yeah, that's my favorite character. So I'm not gonna try and be different. Usito's a good character, but I want more from him. You got a little bit towards the end of the season, mm-hmm. but I want more. And then Suzume, I really liked her as a character, but she's not my favorite.
No. Yeah. I was about to say Suzume was going to be my second favorite character to talk about. And I feel like that's because we did get a clear picture of who she was.
Yes.
And when it really comes down to it is she's that nerdy, excited girl who's happy to be in a world like this where I'm sure a lot of us nerdy people would kind of be like, oh my God, are you first? Really? I'm in an isekai and I have powers. Yep. Yeah, I'm going to take advantage of this. And that's who she was. And like, she was all about it.
Yeah, it was one of those like she could let her hair down moments.
Yep.
When she finally gets isekai'd and she's super excited. I thought she was a great character. She just wasn't one of my top characters.
No, that's fair. The other thing I liked about her was the electric ability.
Yes.
I've been really leaning towards a favorable attribute being electric stuff.
Okay. So
I like that she can be lightning fast and she can just like spark lightning out of anywhere. And she did pull a lot of comedic value out of the show in itself too.
Okay.
And that's really going to come forth with my number one favorite LOL moment. And that's going to be, well, the combination with Usito and Suzume is when in episode 5, when Usito is like, go Inukami, use thunder now. And she was very like, she's like, don't treat me this way. And I thought it was super funny because obviously it's Pokemon and that's super fucking funny.
Yes, absolutely. That is 100% what I thought of. Mm-hmm. So one of my other favorite moments was the first time Suzume meets Blurin.
Uh-huh.
And he was sleeping and she's like, oh, can I pet him? He just swats her hand and she keeps trying to do it and he just keeps doing it.
The swatting in this show was very funny. They did it like 2 or 3 times and it's like the perfect deflection every single swat. And like, I know it's childish, but goddamn, when they do it right, they do it right. And it was very funny.
And the first time I watched it, you're so used to like the quote unquote hero being able to do what they want and animals just fawn over them. And Blue Ren's just like, nope.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it. So I thought it was funny.
Yeah. And I kind of like the idea that Blue Ren just does not like anybody, period. Like,
yes,
even Usito, he doesn't like he deals with the fact that he's got to train with him. But like when it comes to like sentimental, like petting and stuff like that, even he doesn't put up with it. He still bites him and stuff. So I thought that was funny. But yep. Like, yeah, he doesn't want anybody to treat him as a pet.
Yep.
But it's just funny when he's just swatting around everybody because like Suzume is not the only one that he swats away. It was also
the other magic user. You know which ones I'm talking about. It's the brother sister. Was it the sister?
Oh, the other healing siblings.
Yes.
Yeah. The other. Yeah. Because she was like, she was getting ready for battle and she was trying to distract herself and she was distracting herself by trying to get all cuddly with Blue Ren. And even she was getting deflected. So that, yeah, that's where the other comedic value came in.
Ururu?
That's her name? She was the 18-year-old because...
Yep.
Usato was 17.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember that one being said.
Yeah, Ururu. Ururu. You are, you are, you.
Ururu, yep.
So, one thing I am going to say is I thought it was weird the direction they went with the dubbed voice actors for the demons and them having British accents.
Super British. Every single demon was British. Yeah. That threw me off hardcore.
So hard. I was like, wait, what? What is going on right now? Because like the first time I didn't catch it with the other demons. And then I rewatched it. I'm like, wait, all the demons have this accent. What is going on right now?
Yep. Yeah, because the first demon we get introduced to, at least as far as English goes, was Amelia, the redhead who's like commanding stuff. And she's the one that sent out the Black Knight out. But she's kind of casually talking British.
Yep.
And you don't truly pick up on it.
Yep.
But it became super, super obvious when Felm, who is the Dark Knight outside of her mana armor, that's super obvious, obviously. But yes, it did become obvious at that point that all of them were talking British.
Yeah, and it threw me off so hard. I was like, okay, it's... I guess we got to distinguish them for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah.
I was very confused, and I'd be very interested to know, I guess, the reasoning behind that.
Yeah. Is that something that the original author was like envisioning, or was this something that Crunchyroll's like, fuck it, let's just...
That has to be a... I mean, I guess it doesn't have to be a director thought, but I feel like that is a director choice because the subs aren't... Granted, it'd be weird to have a British Japanese accent.
Yeah, I was about to say.
But still, I watched this subbed because I did enjoy it when it came out. So the second time watching it through, it really threw me off because I am kind of expecting it to be not the same, but not that different.
Okay, so since you watched this in Japanese first, The Dark Knight, was it like more menacing?
Yes. Yeah, it was the same concept.
Interesting. Okay. Because there is, for anybody who plays Jackbox, I think it was like Jackbox Collection 5 or something like that. There's this menacing Death Row trivia question game. And the best way I can describe it is there's this sassy demon who's trying to give you trivia questions. And he's also trying to kill you at the same time if you answer wrong.
Okay.
And the voice... acting, whatever the voice recording deal is, it's a common voiceover thing, so it's not like it's a unique voice, but they sounded the same, so like it was really funny to me, like the same sassy like come at me bro kind of thing was going on here, and to me that was comedic, but at the same time we got to see the power behind the mana suit, the Dark Knight.
Yep.
And after Usato comes into play, we get to see the full power of the suit. And then it becomes super symbiotic with, like, basically Venom. She's fighting Venom. And I was really, really getting into that because I love how he maneuvers and everything like that. That's kind of stuff. So I was about to say that Felm was going to be one of my favorite characters. And that's really only because I love her dark suit. And
makes sense.
And that's really only because it reminds me of Venom so much.
Also makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I actually really liked Felm. I liked the fact that they brought up the fact that she's not loyal because...
Yeah, the loyalty aspect of her is very interesting.
Well, that and... I mean, they basically brought it up already that demons aren't loyal. And they'll do whatever they can to win the war. So it makes sense that, you know, she does not feel any loyalty towards anybody. And then, you know, she basically has never felt any kindness in her life. So then the first person that gives her any sort of kindness, she's going to be magnetized towards, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair to say. Because it was very heart-touching when the moment that she was getting, like, healed inside that prison.
Yep.
And then, like, Usto was just sitting there with his hand on her cheek, and she's like, no, please hold this a little bit longer. Like, I felt that. I felt that for her, and I'm like, okay, I don't think you're a bad person anymore. Like, you showed some vulnerability here, and I think that was legit.
Yep. Yeah, I think that was legit as well. It was very nice to see. I was not expecting it, actually.
No, not at all. What? So staying on film and because of all that stuff and like kind of looking forward to season two kind of stuff.
Yep.
Like she's still a demon. She's still part of the bad guys, but she's being reformed to be part of the healing crew stuff, like the runner.
Yeah.
Do you think she's going to be loyal to our heroes, or do you think there's going to come a moment where she's going to be on the battlefield and she's going to have an opportunity to escape and rejoin and the collar is going to get broken? Like, do you think there's going to be a moment where she has the possibility to go back to the dark side?
I think so, because it's going to add suspense to it. But I think something's going to happen to Uzito and she's going to pick him over anything else.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah, I can see that. Like, so what you're thinking is she's going to temporarily go towards the...
I think she's going to be tempted.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, something is going to happen to Uzito, or it's going to be like, you either pick us or Uzito dies, or it's pick us or like something's going to happen to Uzito.
I can see that. I can see her coming to his aid right when she has the opportunity to go back to the demons.
Yeah.
And she has that choice. Yeah, I can see that.
And that's going to be like the aha moment where she's truly rehabilitated.
Yeah. Mainly because she's just all about Uzito. Like she can care less about the humans. She just more or less loves him.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm totally on board with that.
Speaking of loves, do you think, what'd you think of all of Suzune's like, where she was trying. She was trying so hard with Uzito.
Yep.
And he was super oblivious, of course.
Yeah. I mean, they started out very vague about potential love stories growing. And then she just became slightly more and more obvious as the season one continued.
Yep.
So I really appreciated the comedy in that. Like, oh, hey, do you not recognize how casual we talk to each other? And that was a quick light jab, like, oh, you know, I never thought about it that way. But and like, she's making it obvious.
It means a lot more when it comes to Japanese culture, because,
oh yeah, good point.
When you're casual, that typically means you're more friendly together. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have any sort of like romantic relationship, but it's just, especially in the beginning of the series where it was, I'm the class president and you're just some random person. And now we're like chummy together.
Right. And then it made it more funny because just like you were saying, Uzito went from this nobody to this fucking super ripped muscles popping everywhere. And she's obviously super into it. So like, yeah, it's pretty funny how into Uzito that Suzune is. And she's dropping all these hints and Uzito is not really picking them up, or he's not, you know, confronting them properly. And we're seeing on the side that Kazuki, the other male hero with the light powers, you know, he's can chummy with the princess.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Like, so like they have a love story kind of going on. So yes. At the same time, we're like, okay, well, Suzune and Uzito, like they could work. But at the same time, now we have Felm, and like she's clearly into him. So like, but Uzito is also very oblivious to Felm at this point. So like, we're kind of rooting for something to happen for Uzito, but exactly who are we rooting for at this moment? I think Felm's gonna get the short straw.
Okay, I was gonna say between the two, who would you?
Yeah,
you think it's not that you would rather him be with Suzune, but that's who you think it's gonna be with?
Yeah, pretty much. Like,
okay,
they have a little bit of history. They have. You know, they're supposed to be these heroes, even though Uzito is not considered a hero, but he was still brought into this world with powers.
Yes.
Which is also very strange. Okay, so what's going to bring... Now we have to talk about this.
Okay.
In episode one, with the bell tones or whatever, they were hearing bells in the background. Suzune and Kazuki both heard the bells. Uzito did not.
Yep.
So, which clarifies that the other two are heroes and Uzito is not a hero. None, despite all that, Uzito still gets transferred, so he's part of the crew.
Yep.
And he still gets magic powers. He's not some normie.
Yes.
He still gets something. And not only does he get something, but he gets one of the most rarest magics. And yes. I was about to say, and he's super good at it, but you know, it's just his personality. So he went above and beyond, so he's doing good for himself. So what do you think about him being in this trio that's not a trio?
In Usato's case, wrong place, right time moment where he just happens to step into the magic circle the same time it appears, so that he gets transported as well.
Right.
So I really like that concept where he is the main character of the story, but it's almost by chance.
Right.
And then because of his personality, like you had said, that is why he is the main character, not because he's the hero of the story. So he is pushing through all of his adversity and just trying to be the best person for this new world that he got sucked into. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I like the concept because a lot of times it's, all right, he's the main character because he's the hero, he's the strongest, he's all these other things. And Usato had to work to be the strongest. Usato had to work to be able to use his healing magic, which he still doesn't actually know how to use it all the way, because he talks about how he doesn't know how to cure diseases, and that's only something that you're going to get the knowledge to do by healing people. So you have to just keep working at it,
right,
to be able to expound on your knowledge of healing. So I really like this concept. I don't want it to be an all the time. Like, I don't want to keep seeing this concept. I like the fact that it doesn't happen very often, because I feel like it would get very old really quick.
Oh, yeah. This show capitalized on the background character in a very nice way.
Yep.
That's not boring, and they did a great job. It's kind of like the Eminence in Shadow, where they're trying to be the background character, and not in an OP way like the Eminence in Shadow is.
Yep.
But he's still, yeah, like you said, he's working his way through. He's earning his way through.
Yep.
He's the one that's doing all the extra damage. I mean, I guess in a way, being a healing guy the way he is kind of considered OP.
Yep.
Like, he's running hardcore, and at the same time, he's healing himself. So it's like insane.
But I like the fact that they brought other characters who can also use healing magic but can't do the same thing.
Oh, yeah, like the brother and sister.
Yeah, so if you...
The limitations.
Orga and Uruuru, those two both have healing magic, but they're more apt to healing individuals, not themselves.
Oh, yeah.
So Usato, just like Rose, is kind of an aberration when it comes to healing magic, which is already unique within this world, and kind of looked down upon, and because of Rose, they're working towards it not being something people look down on them for. Yeah.
Because everyone's always going to look forward to the person who can do the most damage,
yep,
period. And the healers are going to be the ones that do minimal damage, but they can last longer. So that's going to be the trade-off.
Yep.
But here we have an anomaly where Rose is just a fucking badass, and she'll beat up anybody. I loved her backstory where she's fighting that wind demon.
Yes.
She's getting all cut up and everything, and she's walking through it, and then she just scared him. Like, he did not want anything to do with her. And that's what really brings a lot of power out of Rose, is just like, she went above and beyond. She's, yep, not just a healer. She'll kick your ass while she heals herself the entire time.
She is a knight who can use healing magic.
Uh-huh.
She is a great character. She's very unique. And I really enjoyed her concept.
Yeah, and Usato's right behind her. He's going to, yep, be the exact... He's going to be in her shadow 100%. If not, he's going to surpass her because he's going to be the secret hero that they didn't realize for whatever reason or something along those lines.
Yep. Okay, do you have any predictions for season two?
Season two, we have to take in the idea that we know that Amako, the fox breed girl, the one that can see visions of the future, is part of this stuff. And
yes,
we are currently traveling to another city. I didn't write down what the city was.
Not a big deal.
Yeah, it was just, you know, some fantastical sounding town. So that's where we're headed.
Yes.
I am going to hope that on our travels there, that we're going to get glimpses of the future at least once or twice.
Okay.
Of some big stupid attacks that we're going to have to fight against that Amako has foreseen. And that's going to add to the drama. It's going to add to the action. I think this will be a lot of fun because we're going to know what's going to happen. And we have to find our way to avoid certain death because
okay,
I would imagine that her visions are the death of the heroes.
Okay.
Kind of like how we saw in like episode 6-ish or whatever when we first met her with the Dark Knight.
Yep.
So I would imagine that being a big heavy thing is she's seeing certain death and we need to avoid that in some way.
Okay.
Other than that, like I guess the biggest takeaway from this series in general is stopping the demon army.
Yep.
I don't foresee the demon army being the biggest takeaway from season 2, or at least a finale. Like there's no way that season 2 is going to be the finale of this show.
Yep.
I think we're going to get a lot more backstory and a lot more build up and a lot more just consuming of allies in season 2 so that we're able to take on the demon army in season 3 and then conclude in season 3. That's kind of where I'm aiming at.
Okay.
What about you? Where are you thinking?
One thing I want to say before we continue, the light novel is concluded, by the way.
Oh, okay.
So take that with whatever you want to. We do know how the series ends according to the light novel. Apparently there is a webtoon and there's also the manga that's continuing. So haven't looked into too much of those, but the light novel's over. So we do have something as far as a start and a finish is concerned.
Do you know at the moment where we are as far as light novel is considered at the end of season 1?
I can attempt to look into it.
Quick Google search.
So did you find anything? Because I have found something.
The only thing that I found was the light novel source started in 2016, which I find pretty incredible because this is a pretty old series that kind of recently just came out. You know, we're recording this in 2024, and this light novel series came out in 2016. So kudos to them for kind of waiting this long to get something animated. So that's pretty interesting. But you found out when season 1 ends as far as light novel sources go?
Approximately, yes. So from what I'm finding, about 1.5 volumes.
Oh, okay. So
yes,
in a sense, like not a lot.
No, not very much at all. Kind of reminds me of World's Finest Assassin, where that was like one volume.
Yeah. A lot of anime came out of the very first volume.
Yes, minus season or the first episode. But yeah, that's here nor there. So I will say read volume 2. I guess start on volume 2 if you want, or just pick it up if you really enjoy the anime. Just you're not reading. You might get a bunch of good information in volume 1 that you're missing out. That's not really necessary as far as the anime is concerned. Which in the time that we've been doing this, I feel like that's kind of the best way to put it, is especially with like, what was it, Jobless? But there was so much information that just was not necessary to make a good anime, but it made a good light novel.
Right.
So that could be this way. I loved World's Finest Assassin, and that was a one for one or one season, one volume kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I also saw August of 23 is when volume 3 was translated. So barely a year ago.
Oh, yeah. I'm seeing that right there, too. Yeah. So, yeah, for our English speakers, that's as far as you're going to get.
Yes.
Which kind of sucks. But if it helps for anyone else to imagine, the series in itself is 12 volumes long.
Is it? Okay.
It's
interesting.
And then there's a spin-off series that recently picked up, and there's 2 volumes of that. And that's all I'm going to say about that, because I don't even know what to even think about that. Like, we're so far in the beginning of what's going on. I can't even imagine a spin-off series.
Yeah, we're 1/6 of the way through the light novel.
Yeah, and that's the best way to say it. Like, if you said that we're a volume and a half in, at this pace, we're looking at 6 seasons worth of Wrong Way to Use Healing Magic.
Yep.
Which is crazy. I don't even know what to imagine.
I have a feeling we're not going to get 6 seasons, but that would be cool. It would be great. It would kind of make sense if they skipped a bunch of like treaty information.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to speculate anything. There we go. 1.5 volumes.
Yeah.
So it'll be very interesting as far as what season 2 is concerned. I do kind of agree with you, Lance, where we're going to get peace treaty stuff. I do have a feeling we're going to have some issues with demons because of Felm. Yep. Because as we know, at the end of the episode, she is following Usito.
Is she really? Because she's also being like tutored and followed by Rose. Like
Rose is going to go with.
That's kind of what I'm thinking too. Like she wants to like kind of shadow this.
Yeah.
And she knows that Phelim is like, she's very interested in Usito and wants to like be by his side and stuff. That's kind of the way we're pointing. But at the same time, like, Rose wants to make sure that her protege is going to be, like what she was saying, like, invincible. Like, she wants someone who will not die. That's her goal, is to make someone like that. And they said that in the anime, if in case anybody's worried. But I'm really hoping that they stay true to that. And it comes to a point where Usito will inevitably come close to death. And he's going to anime logic his way out of dying because he's inevitable to death to whatever reason. So I want to see that come to truth because of that one line that she said.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Like, he can figure out how to regrow limbs or something.
Oh, that'd be crazy.
And that's not supposed to happen with a normal healer.
Uh-huh.
I can do it.
Yep. He's transcended to some god level healing magic, and he's the best of the best. I mean, that's kind of the idea of, you know, the hero of the story kind of stuff. But we also need to really play along the lines of wrong way to use healing magic,
which they did throw that line out there.
Yeah, I'm so happy they did that. Ironically enough, it was like episode 8 or 9 or whatever they used it. Like, it took until like almost near the end of the season in order for this to truly make its round into why the title is the title. But at the same time, in order for the show to be a good show, is you have to use that same exact concept relatively often enough.
Yep.
So,
which we're moving towards it with him fighting, dodging.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I'm so happy he's figuring out this dodging technique. I love the training concepts between Usito and Rose, and like just their aggressive nature towards each other, and how Usto always wants to be better than how he was yesterday.
Yep.
Truly appreciate that. I love that in an anime. It's, you know, it's encouraging. It's, you know, it's a good way to push yourself forward in anything that you might be dealing with in your own daily life, maybe even a workout.
Yep.
But just keep remembering that you can keep pushing yourself forward. But like I was saying, wrong way to use healing magic. We saw one instance where it's the wrong way to use healing magic. And I would like to see multiple ways, multiple unique ways of how healing magic can be used out of the ordinary in order to keep the show interesting and stay on point.
I mean, if you really want to nitpick, it's technically 2 because it's Rose fighting the wind demon. And
oh, sure. I mean, that makes sense.
Because she's essentially healing herself mid-fight to make herself stronger to fight this demon. And then Usito is truly using it wrong, but you know, I'm trying to help.
Right, just throw it a bone. Yeah. But like, I would just like to have another complete left field idea of how to use healing magic, because
he just randomly gets a sword.
I don't know, almost anything. I just want some bullshit reason. Because I would have never imagined a healing punch disintegrating some kind of mana shield like the Dark Knight. That's something you would never imagine. So, like, it was perfectly acceptable. I was totally on board with that.
Yep.
So I want to see more.
Yeah, then I love their explanation. Oh, he's just healing the demon greater than the attack could, or something. It was something along those lines where I was like, sure. Yeah. Okay. Such anime logic in that.
There was so much, because what they were alluding to was, it was like mental and all that kind of stuff damage that she was taking, because she was getting healed with every punch. But then when he went to go actually heal her in the jail cell, like, she was on death's bed for whatever reason. And then he's, oh, hey, let me just touch you and heal you.
Yep.
She wasn't physically damaged.
But she was.
But she was acting physically damaged.
She was actually physically damaged. Yeah, it was a weird concept, but I can't wait for more. I do feel like the demons are going to find a way into season 2.
They have to, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the whole purpose of this war to begin with.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to see them. I feel like Phelim is going to create some issues because
she has to.
She is following them, and I think it's going to be a fun time. I am really looking forward to season 2. hopefully we don't have to wait forever, but I guess we'll wait and see on that one.
Yeah, I mean, especially at the rate that at least the English has been translated from the light novel.
Yep.
But maybe if there's enough of a following, it can be on a fast track. I do have one more concept to bring up.
Okay.
Back when we were talking about how Uzuto is, like, he's not the hero.
Yes.
But he was brought in with the heroes. So yes. Back when Inukami and Kazuki were fighting the Dark Knight.
Yes.
And all the reflection blasts were coming back at them. And then we found out that Uzuto was also receiving damage, like, mentally on the sideline. Like, he was far away.
Yeah.
He wasn't even part of this fight.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, like, his shoulder blasted out. Like, he received, like, internal damage during this fight.
I remember him getting, like, him seeing the vision and him running in, like, him getting a migraine or his head was bothering him. But I don't remember his shoulder.
Something. I remember very specifically that he was personally afflicted when Kazuki got hit by his own reflection.
Uzuto, right?
Uzuto, yeah.
Yeah,
he wasn't near the battle. He was trying to save other people. And he had to get saved by one of the other, by the other warrior that he recently saved. So, yep. Like, he saved someone, like, 10 minutes ago, and he was running away. He was healing him, and then he saved him. And then Kazuki got hit. Uzuto fell. And then Uzuto was about to die from another demon. But Uzuto was saved by that same warrior that he saved.
Yep.
And none of that would have happened if he didn't get afflicted by whatever reflective blast. The point is that for whatever reason, he shared that damage. He shared the pain that our heroes felt. So I want to know if he wasn't part of the original heroes. He didn't hear the bells ringing. And he was like an accidental summon.
Okay.
Why is he still getting all of these pros and cons when it comes to the heroes?
Interesting. Okay, so I cannot remember the instance in which you're talking about. The only thing I can remember is him having the flashback and it mentally affecting him that way.
Oh no. Yeah, I he totally fell on the ground and he was about to die.
So I do remember that, but I don't remember why that happened.
Yeah, I didn't write down the episode. Okay. But it was definitely during the Dark Knight battle, so it was like 10-ish, somewhere around there.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, so I just want some clarification on if all these heroes can share these kind of pains, or...
I'm going to go with no. I think they're all individual people, mm-hmm. So nothing that happens to any individual one is going to happen to the other.
Okay. That's some...
I think it was just a coincidence.
Yeah, there's some... That's a thing that I picked up on that I just put a lot of if you're not picking up on it, maybe I put too much thought into it, but
okay.
I guess we'll just see.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember. So I'm going to go with just a coincidence.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't have anything else. Do you?
No. Yeah. I mean, this show in itself, it's pretty straightforward. It's a great watch. It's very easy and it was entertaining. It was funny. I appreciate the show a lot because.
Yep.
The comedic value really brings out this value of an isekai.
Yep.
It's a simple idea. It's an odd idea because it's a healer. You know, it's kind of like Shield Hero, how we thought that was such an amazing anime in the first season.
Yep.
It's different and it's fun.
Absolutely.
And it's funny. So I guess let's just jump into the considerations for if we would recommend this to anybody. Again, yes, I would recommend this to people. It's a fun watch. If you want some time to burn, like, this isn't your go-to must-see, but if you want something funny and casual, this is a good anime.
Yes, you will absolutely not regret watching this, but it's not going to be your, like, top one or two. That's right. All. So it's a good watch. Good, easy watch. Mm-hmm. Now that we are done talking about the wrong way to use healing magic, Lance has been throwing some Pokemon quizzes my way, at least in this case. I know, do you have some more for us this week?
Yes. So let's get started with our Pokemon quiz today.
Well, hopefully I can do better than last week.
This one might be a little simple depending on how familiar you are. Obviously, we're all familiar with Pokemon. Question one, who is the tallest Pokemon? Okay, let me specify for all our listeners, we are still talking about Generation 1 specific stuff. So red, blue, yellow, maybe even Generation 1, the anime or okay. the manga. So yeah, who is the tallest Pokemon?
Okay. So a couple things. I know Dragonite is short. I recently watched something and they were going over like Dragonite and Charizard. They are both very short.
Yeah, they are oddly short. Like technically they are short.
Yes.
They may seem tall, and especially that one anime episode with Dragonite and the lighthouse episode where he was like the size of
The lighthouse in the ocean. Yes, yes.
Yeah, no, that was all ghost stuff. But no, yeah, they are basically a little bit taller than a human.
So Charizard is 5'7".
Ooh, don't cheat too much.
I'm only looking up those two.
Okay.
And then
5'7"?
5'7".
I'm taller than Charizard. What?
Yes.
That's what you get for early 1990s. They didn't think that far ahead.
But you are not taller than Dragonite. Dragonite is 7'3".
Okay. Yeah, that's taller.
Yes, significantly taller. So my first guess was to think of Onix.
Okay. What's your second guess?
My second guess would be Machamp. I feel like Machamp would be tall.
Okay.
Are either of those right?
Well, do you have a place and answer?
Okay, I'm going to go with Onix.
Yeah, Onix is the tallest Pokemon in Season 1, at least.
Yeah, I just remember the first time Ash fought Brock, and it was like the size of the building.
Exactly, yeah. That thing was enormous.
Do you have a height on Onix?
I did not look it up.
Okay, give me 1 second. I can look it up. Onix is 29 feet. I guess you want to say long because he is a stacked segment of rock.
Uh-huh.
But yes, he is sitting at 29 feet.
That doesn't seem insanely large, but I mean, I guess that's big.
I would say that's fairly large. Yeah. So.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. Question two. In Generation 1, who is the shortest Pokemon?
Ooh, shortest Pokemon. I feel like it's going to be like Caterpie. I'm going to go with Rattata.
Rattata?
Yeah.
All right. Both those answers are wrong.
Okay.
It's Diglett.
Diglett, huh? Okay.
Yes. There was a Pokemon anime episode that described Diglett as the smallest and lightest Pokemon. I remember that one specifically. But when I was looking up these answers, I did find the official list for who is considered the lightest.
Okay.
And Diglett is no longer considered the lightest of all time.
Okay.
There is a 5-way tie for who is the shortest.
Okay.
I specifically phrased this as shortest, and I think it was the shortest. Anyway, there's a tie between Joltik,
yep.
Flabébé, Cutifly, Comfy, and Cosmoem. Not Cosmog, Cosmoem. He actually gets smaller when he evolves, which was kind of funny. But yeah, there's a 5-way tie, and Diglett is no longer considered the smallest.
Okay, interesting.
All right, and question three. What level does Mankey evolve at?
Ooh, let's see. I'm thinking either 18 or 22, and I'm going to go with 22.
Should have went a little bit higher, 28.
Oh, man. Okay, well, we're just going to... Okay. Yep.
That's all right, though. Mankey's a very odd character. Have you ever played with a Mankey? I do specifically remember in one of my playthroughs with Yellow.
Yes.
And I will say this oddly, proudly, that I played Yellow multiple times. Yep. And obviously, when you start with a Pikachu, obviously you're going to have a hard time against Brock. So you have an opportunity to catch Mankey very early in the game. So I caught a Mankey, and I played with them pretty well. So that's my experience with Mankey.
Yeah, because Primeape was decent. Yeah, his fighting moves were decent.
He was decent. That's about it. Yeah, he's a good early guy, but long term, no.
No, not somebody you want long term. I think getting to Sabrina because fighting would be good against Psychic.
Opposite.
I have that backwards. Okay, yeah. So not Sabrina. Probably around. It was probably. To get to Sabrina, then I was like, oh, yeah, no, this is doing terrible. So then at that point, I would get rid of Primeape. Mm-hmm. So mid to late game is probably as far as I would ever get with him.
Yeah, he's not going to be too reliable. I mean, you could definitely just straight up keep him if you really wanted to. But Gen 1, he was very limited in what he could do. So
I think he did have Was he able to use the elemental punches?
No, that was just Hitmonchan.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, when it came to Primate, you're looking at low kick.
Just fighting moves.
Barely even, yeah. It was Mega Punch if you wanted to start risking your accuracy.
Yeah.
Which even, Mega Punch was a decent move, but it's a decent move with low accuracy, so it wasn't even really worth it.
Yeah, I did not use him very long.
No. Yeah, like I was saying, good for early game, that's about it. It was really just get through Brock, and then Brock is really the most unfortunate gym leader to have in the beginning of a game. It's like freaking
absolutely
Rock, high defense, especially in yellow version. You really need to just sacrifice time in order to get through it, because otherwise there's no reason to keep anybody in the beginning of the game.
Yeah, because I would keep Butterfly or Butterfree for the first two badges, and then just, all right, go in the box. I don't need you anymore.
Yeah. So yeah. The only people that were worth keeping was post Misty, post Cerulean City.
Yep.
Nothing was good coming out of it, especially as far as yellow version goes. Because obviously in yellow version, you're going to get all the freebie starters, and then that's where the game really takes off. But you're not going to get that until after you beat Misty anyway. So you get Charmander before Misty.
Yeah, you get Charmander right
away. But still, fire versus water, you're not... Charmander is useless at that moment.
Yep, absolutely.
But yeah, so before we get too carried away, that's my Poke Quiz for today. So
1 for 3. I did not do any better.
Yeah, a couple more oddballs to throw out to you.
Well, awesome. Thank you. I do find those fun. Before we get too far, I do want to talk about some anime talk, because I feel like we haven't done it in a while. So at this point of the season, is there anything you're still watching as far as the summer, spring season is concerned?
So as of today's recording, this is literally the last day of May. Okay, so we're halfway through this spring season. And so let's give a quick rundown on kind of what we're doing for short flights. Currently, I am covering Re:Monster and Kaiju number 8. So I'm keeping it light this season. At the time that this episode launches, these will basically be done. So I can confidently say Re:Monster was a fucking piece of shit. I'm powering my way through this anime right now just because I started and I'm like half committed to it. My favorite way to describe Re:Monster was a super horny 12-year-old made this anime, or at least came up with the concept, and he can just be the most overpowered person that you ever want. Nothing matters. I like ogres, and I like having sex with lots of girls, and I want to be super powerful. That's Re:Monster.
That's your concept. Okay.
Yeah, totally annoyed with that one.
Okay.
And then Kaiju number 8, obviously amazing. Yes. We're having a fantastic time watching that one. It's so amazing. At this time of this recording, last week's episode, I think it was like episode 7 or 8. I don't remember right now at the moment, right off the top of my head. But all I'm going to say, fantastic. Loved every single second of it, drawn so far into it. Episode 7, you're saying? Okay. So at the time of this, when this episode launches, Kaiju 8 probably will have 1 or 2 more episodes left. But it's a hype anime, so it's well worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Matt, what are you covering?
Okay. As far as short flights are concerned, I am covering Demon Slayer, Jobless, Season 2, Core 2, and Slime, Season 3.
Yep. I'm watching all of that with you, minus Slime. I'm actually a little bit behind on Slime. But
oh, man.
I mean, Demon Slayer, how can you not be up to date on that?
At the time of us recording, we're still at the beginning of the fourth season of Demon Slayer.
Yeah, so right now, episode 3 is the only thing that's available.
Yeah, but so it's really easy to stay caught up on that one. Yeah,
but it's still good. It's still interesting. There's nothing crazy has happened. There's no point in talking about it.
I've really enjoyed all 3 so far, minus Slime just a little bit because of all the talking that happened in the first handful of episodes. But they're really getting towards some amazing points, and I'm super excited about it. And then some other things I'm watching, Windbreaker. I don't know if you've watched that one.
I'm pretty sure I watched the first 3 episodes.
Okay.
I totally got into it. I just haven't continued it. But yeah, Windbreaker was very fun.
You absolutely need to continue. It is very good. I really, really enjoy it. It's like Tokyo Revengers without the turning back at time.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking too.
So it's so good. I'm really enjoying that one. I'm also watching God's Game We Play.
I watched the first couple episodes of that one too. That did seem it reminded me a lot of
No Game of Life.
Yeah, the controversial brother sister show. But yes, exactly. It reminded me of that with a new spin. But like I'm not going to get too far in that because I only saw the first couple episodes. I like the idea, the concept of gods coming in and helping you. And that's all I'm going to say about the show
there is a god on the team, but she's not really helping them in that manner.
She's playing along.
Yes.
Right. I only saw the first couple episodes. So yeah. That's as far as I really know.
So yeah, she's more just along for the ride. I mean, at this point, kind of.
Uh-huh.
I am watching Kaiju 8. So good. I don't think it had a whole lot of hype to it. Let me rephrase that. It had a lot of hype, but not the same amount of hype as Solo Leveling did.
Agreed.
It is living up to that hype.
Yeah.
It's really good. I'm really, really enjoying it. I can't wait to continue watching more of it. I watched the first three episodes of The New Gate. It was like an isekai with SAO, but not SAO. It was weird. I didn't continue.
Oh, no?
No, it was really weird.
Oh, so you dropped it?
Kind of. I made it through three episodes.
Okay, interesting. Okay.
And then the last one that I watched is How to Love Your Elf Bride.
I've never even heard of that one.
Basically, it's a magician who buys an elf as a slave, and I guess now they're married? I don't remember the exact concept of it.
Is it safe to say that slice of life? Like, just random shit
going on? It's not slice of life. I mean, it's fantasy, because it's mages and elves, but it's like everything's kind of awkward. Because he basically fell in love with her at first sight. So he paid an astronomical amount of money to buy her. And at this point in the series, he hasn't actually told her any of it, like how he feels about her. And it's just kind of, it's fun. Nothing okay. crazy. I'm only four episodes in.
Okay.
Like I'm not super, four episodes and nine episodes are out at this moment in time. So it's not like I'm super far.
Okay.
It's a good watch. Nothing. Just if I want to watch something and I don't have any of the other ones to watch or whatever we're covering, I don't need to watch, I'll turn that on. So I'm not very far.
Okay.
I've been happier with this season than I thought I was going to be, but it's not as crazy as I was hoping it was going to be, I guess. I don't know.
No, that's fair. This isn't supposed to be a super hyped season. Glad that Kaiju 8 is,
you know, I was able say, to be minus the four, like Kaiju 8, Slime, Jobless, and Demon Slayer.
Yeah, and Demon Slayer came in freaking late of yes. the season comparably, but you know, makes sense because episode one was long. So I would assume that this is going to be a short series because of that. I don't know. They can do whatever the hell they want. Demon Slayer is its own thing at this point.
Yep.
But yeah, like this season, they're doing their own thing, and it's okay because there's ups and downs and people are finding time to fill their voids. But as for myself, what I'm watching on the side outside of my short flights, I picked up an old anime called Kaze no Stigma. I'm not exactly sure how old this anime is, but the animation style feels like 1990s. And there's a lot of anime logic going on in this one. It's basically about this one dude who is kind of like this overpowered wind user. And he just goes around and helps out this redheaded fire user who loves him slash denies it all the time. I'm only like 14-ish episodes through like 24 episodes. I'm just casually watching this. But like the concept of this one is kind of simple. And it's kind of oversimplified because the main character, he's too cool to be the main character. It's almost boring.
Okay. But
it's interesting enough. I want to see what happens. So I'm just casually getting my way through it.
Do you want to get ruined? There's no season two.
On Kaze?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not really too surprised.
And the author died. So the series never even finished.
Oh, no. Oh, now I just ripped on it and then he died. Okay. Well, that happened. And then the other show that I watched was...
It came out in 2007, by the way.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's old. Okay, yeah. I said 90s, but, you know, to early 2000s, still kind of the same deal.
Depends on who you ask. It's the same time, so...
Yeah, pretty much.
While you're looking into that, I guess the last one that I'm watching onto the side that isn't within this season is Sumaki.
Oh, yeah. I started that one a while back. I know there are two seasons into this at this moment. But yeah, I've watched a couple episodes of that one.
It does start off really funny. It kind of is Konosuba Light, where the goddess does not like the main character. But instead of getting trapped with the main character, she basically tells him to go fuck himself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I found the other one that I was looking for. Bakugiri.
Oh, okay, yep.
This one, it looked like a little bit of a whatever anime. It's like 12 episodes long. I watched it all. It was okay. It was a mid. Nothing too crazy happened. The idea is there was these two kids who grew up together who wanted to just work out. And they wanted to have these spirits come and help them be the strongest people in a way.
Okay.
And ultimately what it came down to was long, long ago, there was one... They don't even describe him as godly. Like, but there was one strong guy who primarily used punches and one guy who used kicks. And those spirits got dropped into our two main guys, and like they just have these rival fights between them. Like it's like a weird Tekken kind of thing.
Okay. Yep.
The idea is really simple. It's mid, but it was entertaining enough because there was some comedy in there.
Okay.
So I thought it was okay. Nothing too great, but it was okay. I enjoyed it enough.
All right. Nice.
That's really the best I could say. It was like a weird Tekken show.
Okay. Yeah. I guess it's just kind of one of those slower time of the year, I guess. It's probably the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Not watching too much, but we watched so much the past couple seasons. So.
Oh, yeah. We definitely overloaded. So just finding time to watch other stuff, too. I am slightly getting into some D&D.
Yep.
So look for... If you guys want to continue following us, I'm considering a D&D podcast on the side. So we'll see how that turns out.
Yeah, should be a lot of fun. I guess we'll find out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that might be in the more towards the fall/winter area. So yeah, that's going to close today's episode. Stay tuned until after this advertisement. We will have our whiskey tasting moment where we tried 4 different Kentucky whiskeys, but we do have to say our advertisements. Please follow us on YouTube where we have our Short Flight series and where we also post our podcast episodes. And please follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Anime Show. Stay up to date on everything anime related because they post great anime news every single day. And until then, we'll catch you guys next time.
Okay, so we have a few bottles that we are going to be sampling today because my parents went to and did the bourbon trail. Really, they just went to Kentucky and tried a bunch of different distilleries, but they brought a handful of them back, and I'm very curious what they taste like. So we're just going to be doing some samplings today.
Yeah, this is very exciting because I can't wait to try all of them.
Yes. They are not something we would be buying on a regular basis. Most of them are slightly more difficult to buy on the regular anyways, especially the one that we're going to do last is without spending a bunch of money on the secondary market. It is insane to try and find. So, the first one that we're going to be trying is, Willett Pot Still Reserve. It is 94 proof. Kentucky straight bourbon, and it is a small batch bourbon. Lance, you want to try it and let us know what you think?
Yeah, and for everyone that's going to be somewhat interested, this is a very cool-looking bottle. It's like a very tall-necked-looking kind of potion bottle, so I like the nerdiness of this look, so I'm good with that. All right, so I'll give it a try. Yeah, this is super smooth. Right off the bat, I'm totally cool with this flavor. Really easy to drink. I like this one a lot.
Yeah, it's definitely got some, I don't want to say metallic kind of flavor to it, but you can really, almost tell that it's not like it's just that pot still that they brew it in or distill it in. You can really get that flavor out of it. It's a different hit when you're drinking it.
Yeah, I can totally see that. The pot, I can, yeah, just after you say it, I can envision it and I can roll with that easily. Yep. So far, so good. Love this one.
Yeah, definitely a recommend. I guess that's a, we'll go with that, a recommend or not recommend. So yeah. I would recommend this if you can find it for, I think I was looking it up, about $60 to $70. So if you can find it for that price, definitely worth it.
Agreed. All right. And second in line, first I should probably say we're not drinking a lot of this. We're drinking like half ounce pours. So this is literally just a sampling. So we're not getting too smashed over here. Okay. Yet. So the second one we're going to offer to everybody tonight is Blade & Bow, Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, of course, from Kentucky. This is a 91% proof. It's pretty strong.
So this is actually our weakest proof of the four we have.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay, let's give it a go. I feel like this one has a bit of a harsher tone to it. Not harsh as in like the alcohol hits you harder, but like smokier.
Yeah.
I think this is a thicker flavor. Not in a bad way, in a good way.
Yeah, this one is, it's very interesting because it definitely has some, I guess, more of a burn as it goes down, which is interesting because it's a lower proof.
Right.
So you think it would actually have less, but it's.
But I can definitely taste a thicker, fuller, deeper flavor. That's the thing that keeps coming to my mind. Like it tastes more barrely, I guess.
Yes, this is definitely a darker bourbon than the Weller.
And for anyone that's interested in the description of this bottle, it's kind of your more basic looking, nice bottle of bourbon. Like,
yes,
it's not a stupid bottle, but it has a nice, I don't want to say octagon. What is it? Like, it's almost 10?
Six. Oh, it's six-sided.
Oh, okay. Never mind. It's a hexagon.
Yeah. It's just a little bit weird because it's. It's your, wait, what you, almost what you...
Hexagon's eight, sorry.
What's sexton?
A sixagon.
We've only had two tries, I promise. Yeah, this is actually really good. I think this would be more of a like a Saturday afternoon kind of sip versus like the Willet would, I feel like, would be like a Sunday evening, Friday evening, just kind of a chill. While this one, you're like, eh, I can maybe after you mow the lawn or something, just...
I've earned this one. I've done some work. I can earn a deeper flavor of some vodka or whiskey or something.
Yeah, it's good. Definitely recommend that one as well. I think that was around 50, 60 bucks.
Right. I think Willet has a more favorable flavor for myself.
Yep.
But this is still a good one.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the third one we'll be trying is going to be Jephthah Creed. This is going to be the red, white, and blue brand. There is a difference between the two, so we are going to be trying the red, white, and blue version. This is 100 proof.
That's good. Nothing else specific about it? Okay. Right. So 100 proof, our strongest one so far.
I think this one definitely tastes closer to 100 proof, that's for sure. The alcohol on this one is definitely more prominent.
Yes.
This definitely, it just tastes like a stronger whiskey. The flavor, maybe because this is a stronger whiskey, the flavor has taken a little bit of a step back. But if it's one thing I've noticed from whiskeys is my rule of thumb is if it's 100 proof or more, you can throw a nice cube in it just to bring out the flavor. So this is something that we can experiment in the future.
Yes. I did get the most notes, like when I drank it, I've had the most changes in, I couldn't tell you what changes, but I can tell you that there were changes in just the notes that went down as I was drinking it from the tip of my tongue to the back of my tongue.
I can say maybe to that.
that's fine. Neither of us are savants when it comes to whiskey or bourbon, so we just enjoy full flavor.
With that being said, this is still way better than a lot of stuff we've tried in the past, much unlike our Japanese Yamato whiskey that we've had in past episodes, at least for myself.
Yes.
That is some shit whiskey.
Yes.
This is still fantastic. I really do enjoy this. I can definitely see myself drinking this.
So far, this is our most expensive bottle. I think I found it for like $80 online.
Okay.
So, good. I will still say the Willet is my favorite.
I agree. At the moment, without an ice cube. I would like to try this with an ice cube and just a tad bit watered down just to potentially bring out the flavor.
Yep.
I'm going to put this as third place, last place at the moment.
Okay.
But we'll see what this has to bring in the future.
Yes, that definitely could have some changes in the future. Maybe next episode. Okay, and now our fourth and final bottle, which is Colonial E.H. Taylor Small Batch. This is probably going to be the hardest bottle to find, especially for what would be what you should be buying it at. Secondary markets, you can find this for $200 plus. Besides our Johnny Walker Blue, this is probably the most expensive bottle we've ever had.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to it.
And just for a reminder, if anyone listened to any of our older podcasts, we did Johnny Walker Blue on a New Year's episode, and we didn't care for it. It's a decent whiskey. It was tasty.
It was.
But not a $200 tasty whiskey.
I think it was.
We bought it for like $220 at that moment because of the time frame.
Yep.
But outside of New Year's with the markup.
Yeah, I think you can find it for like $150.
Yeah, maybe out of stock. Yeah. So if you're lucky.
This one, you're not finding it, and you're not finding it for probably less than $150 plus. If I had to guess, I absolutely refuse to spend triple to eight times whatever the price they paid for it. So I was accepting of the fact I was never going to drink it, but here we are, and now it's finally in my house.
It's here, so let's do it.
Yes. Also, 100 proof as well.
Okay. Right off the bat, this has a lot of flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a lot more favorable flavor than the Jephthah and the Blade and Bow. I can say that right up for sure, right off the bat.
Yes, that is very smooth. Definitely some bitter notes, but it's not as harsh as you would think for a 100 proof.
Not at all.
Yep. And yeah, this is, I understand why people really like this. This is definitely my favorite one of the four.
Yep. This, now that we're trying first and fourth, the Willet was insanely good. I'm glad we tried that one first because that started out as a high bar.
Yep.
And this one is also very good. And I almost have to try them again side by side. But this one is super good. I like this one a lot.
Yes, absolutely delicious. I could definitely drink this neat, no problems. And it is a very good, just relaxing pour. You can just sip it and no issues.
Yeah. And again, I want to emphasize this may be 100 proof, but this doesn't burn like 100 proof does.
Yeah, it's got some interesting smells going on as well. It's really good. I'll just put it that way. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely recommend this, especially if you're going to be in Kentucky and you can buy this bottle for cheaper. Go for it because it's worth it.
Yeah, if you have the money and you want to spend $150, $300 on a bottle, I understand why people are doing it. It is very good. I cannot wait for Alec to hear us because he was the most excited about this one. I was the most excited about this one, and I would say it didn't disappoint. I'm very happy about this one. Far and away a better drink than the Johnny Walker Blue.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, all of them really good. The E.H. Taylor is my favorite. The Willet is not far behind, that's for sure.
Yeah, to me right now, they're pretty much neck and neck. They're so good.
Yep. And then we have the other two that's...
They're good, but they're not as good.
Yes.
We got preface that we've had worse whiskey in the past, but I would much rather drink these two over a lot of the other whiskeys we've had in the past 3 years.
Absolutely. 100%. I completely agree. They're good, not great. The other two are great, and that's pretty much how I would label them.
Yep. And I think that's fair.
And that's it. Yeah. I want to say thank you for anybody who listened to us just kind of sit and talk about some whiskey. I know we're an anime podcast, but we do love our drinks. For anybody that's interested, the bottles will be in the description in our episode. So if you want to look up and actually see what these are and potentially buy them yourselves, you can do it that way as well. You can go into our description and get these bottles yourself.